Hello and welcome to the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. Huge guest on the podcast this week, Gary Owen. Huge for me. I wanted a connection with Gary Owen for the longest time. As a fellow white guy trying to reach an urban audience, I always thought it would be good to have Gary Owen on the pod, but I was never in a position to do it. And this is the nice thing, one of the many nice things about having come back to Adelaide, is that I wouldn't say I was the only show in town for podcasts to do when people are here, but it's certainly a lesser crowded landscape than being in Austin, Texas, New York City, or California. So Gary Owen's on the podcast. Isn't that exciting? I went to go and see a show. He let me come. He let me bring a big... He let me walk through with a big entourage. And then afterwards we went down and we had a conversation. I took him for as long as I could. He was very good to give me his time. I wish I'd been more organized and had it at another place, but we did it here. And anyway, here's a commercial. And then here's Gary Owen. Ever woken up and immediately needed a nicotine pouch and or a cup of coffee just to feel like a human? How many pouches, cups of coffee and or energy drinks did you need per day to stop yourself from crashing or even from feeling nicotine withdrawal? Perhaps you would like to try Ultra Pouches. These pouches are completely nicotine-free and caffeine-free. And you're probably thinking, well, if they don't have nicotine or caffeine in them, what exactly is in them? That's a great question. Did you know it was possible to feel this energized and focused without any nicotine or caffeine?
Calm, steady, flow state focus, enhanced memory, smooth energy, mood balance, all with zero nicotine and zero caffeine.
Ultra is the ultimate guilt-free pouch delivering instant focus and mental clarity without nicotine or caffeine. New customers can use the code CATAMARAN to get 15% off at takeultra.com. That's takeultra.com for 15% off with code CATAMARAN. And after you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please show support for our show and tell them our show sent you. Gary Owen, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And what a wonderful show it was here at the Norwood Town Hall. You got every black person in Adelaide out to the show tonight.
This is your hometown, right?
This is my hometown. This is where I'm from.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Why?
I just never met anybody from Adelaide.
I'm trying to think of one person you might know from Adelaide globally, and there is nobody.
Well, one thing Australia, I think people forget. I didn't realize this. I did Dr. Phil with Adam Ray?
Yeah.
At the State Theater in Sydney a couple days ago.
Yes.
And then
beautiful.
He put up an AI picture of me, him, and it was Chris Hemsworth, okay. Thor,
yeah.
Russell Crowe, Gladiator, and then Hugh Jackman, Wolverine. I said, you Australians got these damn superheroes and these iconic characters on lock.
We can pretend to do the accent, so you will get Australian actors. Margot Robbie, beautiful. We have flesh, we have beautiful bodies, and we can pretend to the accent. But in terms of great thinkers, no, there's no Australian director you could... We made Mad Max. That's the one movie that we made that came out.
Which one?
Mad Max.
Yeah, that's
it. And even then, for all those people, you know, we've also got... Kind of got Mel Gibson. We're very proud to have Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
But obviously some trouble there.
Yeah, I think it's behind him.
Is it?
I see him on so many Netflix movies now. Like out of left field. Some of them are not that great. There's a couple I was like, whoa, that was good.
But you're from Ohio. Mm-hmm. I did a big deep dive.
Did you?
Yes. America's the funniest serviceman. And then you... Here's what I didn't understand is you went to San Jose to start doing comedy. No, San Diego. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. San Diego, where Wikipedia says you got a big black fan base from San Diego. But I've been to San Diego. And it's not what I would immediately... I mean, I think there are three times as many Asian people as there are black people in San Diego.
Well, there is... Here's the thing. There's a huge black population, but you got to go to that side of town, southeast. A lot of people don't go to southeast.
You've got to go as far away from La Jolla as possible.
Possible.
Okay.
So that's when I first started. I was doing two different worlds. So I would do the La Jolla Comedy Store, but the only night was Sunday was open mic.
Right.
So whether I would get up or not... I would go on Sunday nights because you'd have to call in at like 4.
Sure.
And then at 7, you find out if you're on the list and the show starts at 8. So you literally had an hour notice you got on the show. So whether I got on or not, my Sunday nights for about a year was hanging out at the Comedy Store in La Jolla. And then one day a week isn't a lot, and you're only getting up every other week. It's not a lot of stage time.
Yeah.
I was in the Navy, and a couple of the black guys, I was telling them, man, I'm trying to be a comedian, da-da-da. They're the ones that told me all these spots I can go to, but you got to go to the hoods, basically, right?
Yeah.
But I could get up 3-4 times a week. So I would start doing all the black rooms because, like, oh, I can get on stage.
Where the opportunity is, you're going to take that. Because I found this when I went to America, the extent to which people won't do it. White people will not. There are black comedians who play the white rooms. Yeah. There are very limited, and mostly from Philadelphia, guys who will play black rooms. Big J. Okerson would play black rooms. Shane. There's a couple guys, but overwhelmingly, it's a segregated comedy scene. I think, astonished by this.
I think it's more where it started. I think was one where are the stages at? If they're in a black neighborhood, a lot of white guys don't want to go to that part of town. And two, the Apollo and Def Jam was good and bad as far as like the mentality for white comedians.
You've been on the Apollo stage.
Mm-hmm.
You did. I mean, how?
I did Showtime at the Apollo.
But how?
What do you mean?
How is that allowed? I'm not allowed to do that.
Oh, I think they asked me.
But they're not asking.
I think they just
asked
me.
How do I get
me.
To the point where I went to the Apollo to look at it and to stand in the lobby because James Brown live the Apollo volumes 1 and 3.
Yeah.
Are the finest recordings I think anyone's ever done of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
I got to stand in the lobby and they were very kind to me and then they did ask me to leave. And I'm told that usually when white people perform at the Apollo, they're asked to pay an additional fee. As a form of reparation.
Oh, I've never heard that.
There were two white ladies who did a podcast there.
Oh, I've never heard that.
They had all their fans come up from, you know, mid-city all the way. I don't know. They came from downtown Manhattan all the way up to Harlem, and then they had to pay an extra fee.
I'm not saying you're wrong. They didn't ask me to do that. That's all
you
I'm saying.
I don't know anyone else who has a black audience in America who is a white person other than you.
Well, it's crazy because it's definitely changed the last couple of years with social media and, you know, like let's say like Nate Jackson and Matt Rife, really TikTok took them over the top.
Yes.
For me, I already had a pretty strong fan base.
Yeah.
But Facebook took me to a whole new stratosphere because it's a little older crowd on Facebook.
Sure.
But they have money and they pay ticket. They'll pay, right?
Yeah.
Where I think TikTok is a little younger.
Sure.
So and Instagram, great platforms to get your stuff out. But I don't know
if you want
to
make money and move tickets. Facebook,
you
want to
move
some
tickets for my age group.
Yeah.
Facebook was the one, and it was a lot of the military jokes that went viral. For me,
I say though tonight this was a younger. You have a younger crowd in Australia.
Yeah, I'm not saying exclusively.
Yeah,
I'm just saying I had the audience.
Yeah,
but then it just got that much bigger with Facebook.
Yes,
you know,
I only know one person who does Facebook, but maybe I'm leaving that.
Yeah, you gotta. Well, you look at like you know Country Wayne is.
I do not know Country Wayne.
He's literally getting 1 billion views a month.
Okay,
1 billion.
His name's Country Wayne.
Country Wayne. He's making like. He's making 7 figures on Facebook a year, well over 7 figures, because he's doing these little sketch shows only on Facebook. He said, I figured out the algorithms. I figured out like the code.
Yeah.
He goes, and he knows the audience. And he's the one that said it's an older audience. You're going after the aunts and the uncles. You're not going after the nieces and the nephews. And they have better attention spans.
Sure.
And they can follow a storyline. So he's got his own little soap opera going on.
I had not even considered. I didn't remember people were on Facebook.
Yeah.
I only went on it recently to follow Australian politics.
I get more monetization.
Yeah.
And I get the most views and I have the most follow. Like I got like 5.5 million on Facebook.
So well, this is going to Facebook. This is going directly to Facebook.
Yeah.
It's the only place this will live is Facebook.
Yeah. If you give me like, you got the perfect joke.
Yes.
What platform? Like Facebook. Before all of them.
This has allowed you to move to, you're in Houston now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out of the comedy scene. You have the social media thing. You don't need to be plugged into one of the like 3 or 4 big comedy cities in America.
No,
but
I did that.
Houston?
I started in San Diego.
Okay.
Like, and that's not a huge comedy scene, but it's close enough to LA.
Yes.
And I was doing both worlds. I was doing mainstream and the black world. So the mainstream, I would say like my class was like Bobby Lee.
Okay.
Was with me coming up open micing. And then I would, when I do the black rooms, it'd be like Nick Cannon was doing the black side of town. And same city, same time frame, but I was going back and forth. You know what I mean?
But there's just no one else who does it. I got to do one. I was in America for 3 years, and I got to do one weekend of black rooms one time, where by accident they booked me to open for Finesse Mitchell.
Finesse,
was great, and he was a lovely guy, and he corrected me on some things that I needed to change in my act.
Really?
He said, if you are performing for black folks, we've had a conversation. He got together with the other openers, and he said, we've had a conversation. Here are some ways we'd like you to phrase things differently. I said, oh, thank you. But this was at the, where's T? T's gone. This was at the Pittsburgh Improv. And was, and they told me beforehand, they said, do not change your act at all for black people. And they, I've never had worse advice in my life.
I think.
I know what they were trying to say. They were trying to say, do not pander. They were trying to say, but actually, you can be silly about gay things with a white crowd. Mm-hmm. I had trans material at the time that was working quite well with the white audience in Pittsburgh. The second I said the word trans, I felt the entire black something shifted in the room. And there was a sense of, we would prefer that you didn't speak about that. I could tell. You're getting away with it, I'm sure. But the pivot.
I wouldn't think that. Because I always say black audiences especially have no skeletons in the closet. There's no skeletons. If you're stupid, you're stupid.
Sure.
You know, if you're attractive, you're attractive. If you're ugly, you're ugly.
It's
you're
more direct.
Call it out. Yeah, it's a little more direct. So I'm shocked. I would always tell people, definitely don't pander. I've seen people do that, and it just comes across as wrong. But I often think, like, the awkwardness cracks me up just as much as anything else.
Of a white person performing for black people? Or
a white person going in front of black people doing his material?
Yes.
And I love it when black people are like, oh, we're about to go along this ride with you. You know what I mean? I've seen it happen. I saw Sebastian destroy one night as Sebastian at the Comedy Store. Never seen nothing like it. He did a Ray Charles on him. So I didn't know who he was, but I kind of knew who he was. This was probably 2000, let's say, right? 26 years ago. They had a Fat Tuesdays was the biggest night in L.A. for black comedy and black comedians.
It's called Fat Tuesday?
It's called P-H-A-T, Fat Tuesday.
Yep.
So Guy Tori started it. And you got to realize, late 90s, wasn't cell phones like that, wasn't social media. So it wasn't uncommon for Denzel to show up or Shaq to show up or Kobe to show up or Will Smith to show up. It was common Prince to show up at Tuesday nights at the Comedy Store because they weren't worried about – there was no influencers – they were stars, and nobody had their phones out, right?
Yeah.
Nobody was really tripping. So it wasn't uncommon. So Sebastian goes up one night, and he said, hey, when I go up, turn the lights off and put the spotlight on me. So he did the same thing they did in Ray before Ray came out. Because when I saw the movie Ray, I go, wait a minute. Sebastian did that shit at the Comedy Store. And he did the joke about Orange Gina. We got Orange Gina at the house.
Yeah.
And the girl's like, what do you want? She goes, water. He goes, we got water in the hose. I'm not drinking out of the hose. And I literally saw the audience go, what the f- who is this motherfucker? And then they were with him.
Yeah.
Totally destroyed. So it was awkward at first.
Sure.
But then when he got him, he got him.
The embarrassing default is to ham up being become more autistic. I notice many white people do this and talk about it. That they will become extremely white, a caricature of white. They'll start doing a version of the Dave Chappelle white voice.
Oh yeah,
as don't themselves on set. No. I feel comfortable being myself.
Yeah.
Up there, but I did. There was something about the gay stuff that was different with a black audience.
It could have been that night, though. There was
nights. I did three nights.
Maybe the joke wasn't that good. Maybe
it was. You tell me. It was a great joke about being at a medieval fair.
Not good.
It was really strong. There's a lot of trans people at the medieval fair. It's got nothing.
Well, here's the thing. Black people have no idea what the medieval fair
is. It's not true. I went to the medieval fair. It's astonishingly black. It's much higher than 13% black at the medieval fair.
It must be the black people that aren't going to comedy shows then.
Oh, yes. I don't think these people are going anywhere other than the medieval fair and their computer.
Yeah.
That's the big tour. No, look, I intend to return to trans people at the medieval fair as quickly as possible.
Okay. I've never been, so I don't know.
Never been to the Medieval Fair?
Mm-mm. Well, never been.
I'm snatching as much time from you as I can. At some point, I know you'll stand up and you'll head out of the door. But I feel very blessed as the booker stares at me. By the way, that AAA pass, meaningless. Security at this venue has been very lax. I got so many people in.
They did.
Nobody was checking
wristbands. And I had it in my backpack, and I got jewelry and money in it. And I was like, oh, you're just going to let people back here in front of it.
Well, how long are you away now? You'll be away from home for 2 weeks on the road.
I flew out on June 8th. That's when I left home. Got to New Zealand on June 10th.
Yes.
Because that flight, you lose a day.
It's horrible.
So I left at night, and I got here first thing in the morning on the 10th, but even though I lost a day. I won't be back in Houston until July 12th will be when I come home. Because I'm in London on the 10th and 11th at the Leicester
Square. You go from here to London?
I go from here to Berlin.
Oh, no, that's silly.
30 hours, 55 minutes.
Yeah.
So we got the layover in Dubai.
Did you do this?
Layover in Munich.
Have you done this to him?
No, he's only doing the Australian run. Europe, they added it on. And I was like, I was so excited because I haven't been.
Sure.
But now I'm looking at it going, I probably should have broke that up a little bit. I went home for a week.
Okay, per week, how many gigs? Are you doing every night?
No.
You'll get time to see the Parthenon. You'll get time to...
So we got 2 days in Germany, one show, 2 days. We got 3 days in Amsterdam, one show.
Yeah.
Not Amsterdam, Netherlands, Utrecht. And then we got 2 days in Denmark.
I mean, you have to be doing this for the love because your American audience... You have guaranteed great money. And if you're breaking Europe for the first time, I mean, Australia for the first time, I'm told everybody takes a haircut when they go out. And for us to go to America is wonderful. That's where all the money is.
Yeah.
And when we're at home, we struggle. But you do a big flight overseas, and you have to be making less money than you would had you gone to, I don't know, Alpharetta.
Oh, without question. It's definitely a financial hit.
Yeah.
But it's also like the big picture. Like, I want to come over here and experience it.
Yeah.
I want to see how I can translate and challenge myself. And like I'm doing okay financially, so I can afford to take the hit.
I'm not saying you're not, but
no, I'm saying I couldn't have did this probably 10 years ago. I couldn't have did this for this amount of time. Five weeks, that's a long time.
5 weeks is a long. I did 6 weeks in America just now. We had a baby, and I went out and I did 6 weeks.
Yeah,
and I was having panic attacks by week four, of being. I mean, maybe.
Were you on big shows or were you doing clubs?
It was just me doing clubs. I would do. I don't know. I did Albuquerque. I did Phoenix.
Oh, so you was grinding. Like the stand-up live and stuff like that?
I think I did stand-up live. I did... No, I didn't get to do the Tempe Improv. What did I do? I got to do the American Comedy Company.
That's in San Diego, right?
In San Diego. Yeah, that was the third stop. And there was a lovely wait staff. And I'm told the man who runs that venue is not allowed to talk to the public anymore. And then I got... I mean, you'll know all these places. No, really?
Never been there.
Where did I go next? I did Seattle. I did Emerald City, then I came down to do Hilarities in Portland, a wonderful city.
Was it Helium in Portland?
Sorry, it was.
I take it back. Hilarities is Cleveland.
I've done Hilarities in Cleveland before. It's beautiful. Everyone talks shit on Cleveland. It was fantastic.
Cleveland's a great comedy town.
Detroit for the first time.
Detroit's a great comedy town.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Everyone told me there'd be people committing suicide and wretchedness and violence.
No, honestly,
it was beautiful.
For me, if you ask me the best states for comedy for me.
Okay.
California, Texas.
Yeah.
Ohio.
Absolutely.
Florida.
I was waiting to see if you'd say Florida.
I said those are the four best states for me.
Florida's magical.
Well, even people don't realize during COVID, right? Texas, Ohio, and Florida opened up for everybody else, and they kept comics employed more than anybody else. Because you had like every one of those states have like five major cities. With five A-list comedy clubs.
It's weird. Everybody sleeps on Ohio.
But you got realize. You got
Toledo,
Cleveland.
Yes.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Columbus.
Yeah.
Toledo. Right? So hold on. Cincinnati. And then you got Dayton.
You got Youngstown.
Youngstown's
got
a club? No, you ain't got a club.
You've got...
I'm talking about like legitimate Funny Bones.
Yeah.
Or improvs. You got Dayton.
Yes.
You got Cincinnati.
Yes.
You got Toledo.
Yeah.
You got Cleveland.
Yeah.
You got Columbus. It's 5 weeks of work.
Yeah.
In the middle of COVID. You could just stay in Ohio and do 5 weeks of work.
Also, they
Texas,
will drive. Yep.
Dallas.
Yep.
Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Austin. San Antonio. You got four big rooms.
Come on
there.
Now. You got Lubbock.
But they don't have a comedy club. I'm talking about comedy clubs because you weren't allowed to do theaters.
They have a club now. They have a club. Doesn't look like a real
club. Not during COVID.
Okay.
Where you could do a weekend.
El Paso doesn't have a club?
They do. They got comic strip. You're right. Okay. They do. And then, you know, Florida, without saying, you got Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville.
I just did Naples.
Naples, off the hook?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was lovely. But I did have the worst man in the audience that I've ever...
I've had some... awkward nights in Naples.
I lost it. I was going crazy.
It's better now that they moved it. It used to be in Marco Island, right?
Okay.
Which is about 20 minutes from Naples. When they moved it, right, Captain Brian moved the stop. Now it's way better. Back in the day, comics used to say everything's great about the gig except the gig. That part of town's great.
Yeah.
Daytime's great. The food's great. But the club, it was old.
No, and this felt modern. This felt very nice. It was only like one man who kept telling me that I was a liberal. I don't know what gave him that impression.
That's the thing. That was the problem I was going to say.
Yeah.
When I say old and white, I mean old, white, judgmental, and
sure.
My way or no way with comes to politics.
I had just finished doing 4 minutes of a Vietnamese accent, and then he told me that I was a progressive. So I didn't understand where he was coming from. I was doing my strongest Vietnamese accent for a good long chunk as a part of the show. Huh.
I had a guy.
He stood up and told me I was a Biden guy. And that Trump was going to... Stephen Colbert is off the air now. We don't want politics here.
Okay, I can top that story. Okay. Not the story top you.
No, please.
So probably 2018? So Trump got in office in 2016, right?
Yes.
2018-17, I went there.
21, yeah.
A guy got really upset. And I don't do political jokes, right? I did a joke on Donald Trump, but it wasn't about his policy. It was like a goofy joke on him, right?
Sure.
This guy... start going off like there's more of us than there are you. But I was like, this what are you talking about? He got mad. They made him leave. Right on the way out, he said, "You goddamn N-word lover."
Okay.
Right. So I was like, oh. And then he sent me a message that night on Facebook. He was upset, cussing me out, calling me the N-word, monkey lover, shit like that. Right. So I screenshot it.
Sure.
I did a post about it on social media. Long story short, the guy got fired from his job, and then he got kicked out, and ended up like he had to move, and then his son was threatening me on Facebook. It was like a whole thing. The news interviewed me.
Well, this is more intense than my experience.
Well, that's what happened when I screen. That's right. When I screenshot.
Yeah.
I said, "Hey, you idiot! You got your job on your Facebook page. Now everybody knows where you work." I didn't realize black people were going to go to his job.
They turned up at
his job. Yeah, they turned up at his job trying to find him. I go, oh, I know that was going to happen. So anyways, the next night when I showed up, they had off-duty police officer there. I'm sorry, one police officer there.
Yeah.
And then the owner of the, let's say, auto body shop, I don't know, he came to apologize. Shake my hand. Sorry, that is not representation of our company. Blah, blah, blah. And I just didn't think nothing of it. I was having fun with it. Like, hey, dumbass, you got your job on your Facebook page.
Is he going to show up with a knife at the end of this story?
No, concerned. He got fired.
All right, great.
Then they found out he had to move, and his son messaged me like, you got my dad fired, you piece of shit. And then he started calling me racial names. I go, okay, you clearly didn't learn from your father.
You bet you did not dox the son.
No, I didn't say anything about the son. I just left it alone at that point.
Well, you know, he has a heavy cross to bear, given that that's his dad.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. That's terrifying. I would be terrified that man would come and seek vengeance against me.
No, but I don't think he's all right.
There's a woman who, also sometimes it can go the other way. There's a woman in Australia who got done with an Aboriginal joke. Joshua, you following the Aboriginal Instagram lady who did the thing about the petrol sniffing and lost her job and then started the GoFundMe? What's her name? Someone Spencer. Lisa.
The girl from Melbourne.
Yes. He knew about the story. Everybody, this is the big story in Australia. She did a racist sketch online. She lost her job. She said Aboriginals are getting handouts and sniffing petrol. It was not a well done sketch.
Okay.
There's a way to do some of those jokes in a more funny way, but she wasn't doing them. She got fired. She put up a GoFundMe, and she's now been given, I think, $50,000 for having lost her job.
That's the thing. When you...
She's done very well out of it.
When you dig in on somebody, and whatever that is, like with her with the Aboriginal people, right? You're going to get that many more that, like, that's how I really feel. And I'm going to back this person now. Yeah. When you don't toe the line, when you like, I'm on this side of the fence, a lot of people are going to hate you.
Yes.
But there are a lot of people are going to love you too.
I tell you something that a political lobbyist once told me. They said the advice they give people when they go into politics is do what you really believe, because you will be able to make money out of it. And it doesn't matter what side you're on. If you're on the left, you're on the right, it doesn't matter. You will be able to be corrupt for what you believe.
Think about the stand-up world. Think about the stand-up world. Yeah. Lately, the big thing was the Kevin Hart roast, right?
Which I was at, and I got drunk accidentally and did fall asleep. But it was a great time.
Okay. Well, we all know that Tony Hedgecliff got the heat on that, right?
Yes, he did.
And I said, well, here's the thing people aren't realizing. Every comic, every entertainer, everybody that keeps commenting on it, you're just making them bigger.
Absolutely.
Because his fan base is so dug in, they're like, oh, you're coming after our guy?
Yeah.
Oh, no. If you want to really get them, don't say shit. Don't bring it up.
Well, this is why Chelsea seems to have started up again. She, she became a fan. You don't have to wait in unless you want
I don't mind. I think we get in this business as comedians. Like I said, I don't have to agree with everything you say.
Sure.
I don't have to like your joke. I don't have to think you're funny, but I'm going to fucking go to bat for you to say what you want to say on stage.
Yeah.
We more than any group are offensive proof. A real tried and true comedian, we don't get offended. How can you get
In America? Sure. You did that in America, and you did a beautiful job, and you came out the other side of whatever this cancel culture thing was. Mm-hmm. In Australia, it was unbearable. Nobody was doing a good job during
that
time.
What do you mean?
I mean, there was like, the industry was so captured that there, and we only have 5 clubs here, so we don't, if you're not like on the radio or on television in Australia, mm-hmm. we don't have this, what kept, I think, America going is you had this thing tonight, and you're going to record at some point, so I won't say it all, but it's like, you can't cancel me. You did that thing about the Thai massage parlor, and you're like, I'll just turn up that night and I'll talk about it.
Yeah.
If people still want to see you, you can keep doing it.
Yeah.
Australia is 5 cities. So if they do want to cancel you, gee, I hope you can move a lot of tickets on five specific dates without other.
But my thing is, Mike, comedians getting offended, right? You can't tell me if you're a comedian, you haven't told a joke that could offend somebody or some group.
Yes.
Right? That's why we got in this business, or what I want to get out of this business, and what I think most comics are like, no, I want the dark shit.
Yeah.
I want the, I can't believe you just said that. That is uncomfortable. There's some places I won't go. Like, I won't say some of the shit Tony Hedgecliff says, because you do got to deal with some of the repercussions. I won't say some of the shit back in the day Paul Mooney would say, right? But I still watch them and cringe, but I still like, okay, they're going for it.
Yes.
They're going for it, you know?
I'm going to forget her last name, but Cheryl, what was her last
Underwood.
Name? She was wonderful.
She's been the same. She's been that way for 30 years.
She had the best set of the night. And everything seemed to roll off her like it was not. She was like so professional,
I knew, good
at being in the room doing it. It was.
I
magical.
Knew when I saw it, when I saw the lineup. I go, you know, because every roast there's quote unquote a breakout.
Yes,
right. It was.
She was the breakout.
It was
for
Nikki
sure.
Glaser for the Tom Brady one. I go, as soon as I saw it, I go,
yeah.
Oh, it's Cheryl, 100%.
Yeah,
and it wasn't just like you had Naeem, you had Big J, right? Their delivery is a little more monotone, right?
Sure.
A little more. I know Cheryl. Cheryl's in your face, and she's almost a preacher when she gets going, and when she brings you into her fucking world, she can bring you there for a few minutes. And I was like, oh, 10, 15 minutes?
Yes.
That's her sweet spot on a show like this. I go, she's going to fucking bring the house down. And when she said, you know, you ain't going to get out of here. You in Englewood, motherfucker. I was like this. Yep. I was reading the room like, yep, I saw this one coming.
It was really magical. It was very strange because those things people can get into a... I mean, at some point, the Williams sisters are coming out, and The Rock is asking to be suckled upon.
Yeah,
at that
point,
there was free wine coming out to the tables, and I haven't watched that on the television, so I was zoning in and out. Also, it was very odd watching it because I was on I was at the least famous people table, and so it was me and the chair fillers, and they were all trying to get on the screen, and they were very much overreacting to everything that was happening at all times.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
And I was just eating their canapes that were they'd been put out, I think, very early in the morning. They were very dry. My experience of the roast was not everybody's, but everything lit up and was wonderful. And I will say as well, she went off script because I could see the teleprompter the whole time, and she was. She was just in the... It was ages before she was saying anything that was written down. And then there were other people like Chelsea Handler, who every word was written down, but she seemed very natural. I mean, it was like a real gift that she could read it all.
Yeah, and this is not a knock on her personally, but I disagree with how afterwards she decided she wanted to be offended by everything.
I say this because I don't know if anyone said this, and I don't think I've said this. Everyone else, the teleprompter was working normally. I watched Tony Hinchcliffe do his, and he just did his jokes from start to finish. Someone on the teleprompter was fucking with him. Somebody was moving it away from what he should have been saying.
Yeah.
I think there was someone who had a political problem with Tony Hinchcliffe
who
was on purpose. I haven't heard him complaining about it. Somebody should take a step. I don't know if I was the only one who could see the teleprompter.
Interesting.
They were purposefully moving it away from the jokes he was meant to say.
Huh.
And it was, I think, only because he'd been running that sit-in at the Comedy Store, at the Mothership, night after night after night. He knew what all the jokes were, and he just barreled through it. There was unless a poltergeist got in that machine while he was talking, somebody was actively trying to fuck with him.
I wonder.
I hope an investigation, and he's been a real gentleman about it.
He hasn't brought it up. Everybody got on him, and I will say, if I was going to critique that roast, right?
Sure.
My only critique would have been, you did a George Floyd joke on the Tom Brady roast. So I was like, I think it's kind of like, been there, done that.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years later, I don't think, for me, I'd be like this. I've already moved on from it. It's old news, so to speak, in the joke world, right? It was like, I'll put it like this. I had a comedian.
The caveat started flying.
Well, I was about to say some other stuff. I go, I'm not going to do that play on words. You saw me catching myself. I'll put it like this. I had a comedian over for me in D.C. one time, and it was like probably 2005, right? He goes, yeah, when that is a black comic. He goes, yeah, man, I knew when that white bitch hit that other white bitch with that crowbar. He was like, that couldn't be no black girl. And the whole crowd's looking. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, oh, come on, man. The figure skater? Nancy Kerrigan? I go, whoa, bro. That shit happened 12 years ago. That's how I felt about the George Floyd bit. It wasn't the bit. It was like, well, he already said that.
It's a bit dated.
He did that at the Tom Brady roast. Well, if you're going to ask me a critique, that was what I said. I said, oh, he said that at the Tom Brady roast.
Yes.
He did the George Floyd thing.
He did.
That was my thing.
You know, there haven't been as many brutal police deaths in recent years because racial harmony has returned to the United States.
Yeah, it has.
And so there's no one new to mention. The country's going to be okay. I didn't know that when I went there.
Well,
when I went there the first time. Well, I saw the media and I went there. And
you
were
thinking it's chaos?
Well, also, I was in L.A., and I did go, well, this is chaos. This is my weird, I flew to L.A. I had a 12-hour stopover before I flew on to Pittsburgh. And I just wanted to hang. I had my suitcase. I didn't know you couldn't walk around in L.A. So I had my big trundle suitcase, and I went to Venice Beach. It was the scariest place I'd ever. It was 10 a.m.
Scary.
It was just schizophrenics.
Venice is not a good place.
Shouting into the ocean.
Yeah.
And then I went to the library. I thought I'll just hunker down in a library. Right? Library is good. Yeah, I can read. I can use the internet because I didn't have money at this time. So I thought I'll use their internet and I'll recharge everything. And the library that is closest to LAX is in Inglewood. So I didn't know, but I went to Inglewood and I walked around with my big trundle suitcase through the streets of Inglewood. And it was the most confronting. I've been here my whole life.
Yeah.
So a lot of Chinese people and white people and some Aboriginal people. But never before have I been the only white guy in within 10 blocks, you know? And then I got to go. And then you cross a road and it goes from 100% black to 100% Hispanic. There's no blur. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not like a melting pot. People say that.
Well, there was a rumor, and
you
I don't know if it's
true. Cross the street and it's 100% different. Please.
Well, it's funny you say that because there was a rumor, and I have nothing to substantiate it, but whoever told me, I believed them. They said Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Used to go to the Starbucks in Inglewood because he could read his scripts in peace.
No one knew who he was.
Would bother him, and they didn't know who he was. And he'd sit in the corner. And they go, it wasn't uncommon, to see him in Starbucks reading.
I believe
scripts
it.
In the back of there because he goes, nobody's going to bother him.
And may I just say, it is one of the greatest libraries I've ever been to. Is the Inglewood Public Library?
Really,
the chess section. I don't know if someone there is trying to breed a new Bobby Fischer, but there are shelves and shelves of excellent chess books.
Huh.
The restrooms were clean and orange for some reason. It was
never been. Never been to the Inglewood Library.
Not to have a lot of people. It was basically empty. Yeah. But it was beautiful. But it was like a real... I understood that point in a way that I hadn't, because in Australia, there is everything sort of blends together. We're closer to being one culture. And in the United States, this is what I'm saying. It's really... You just say, they put me on, they asked me to do it, I went to those rooms, I got the stage time. Mm-hmm. It is... It's hugely weird. It's hugely weird and good. And when I got to perform for black audiences, I loved it. And even now I go, I'd like a black audience. I'd love one. That was the best audience I ever performed to. Mm-hmm. There were people doing this.
Yeah.
There were people standing up. It was great.
So when you're on...
What is my road back to that?
When you're on the road with Shane, right?
Yes.
How many black people were in the room?
There's a percentage, but I would say the more Hispanic people really come along. And I would
the
say,
best.
Yes.
I think they're the best audiences. As far as like support.
Well, they've stood by Morrissey bizarrely for a long time.
I've realized since I started this tour in January, right? All the my best numbers.
By the way, I just want to say Shane does have black people who come to the show. I can't let that pass.
I have no doubt.
But I would say more white people than black.
Yeah, I've seen a social media post. Yeah, I don't think it's photoshopped. But I've noticed that my strongest markets are the one you would think, and it's true, heavy Hispanic population.
Interesting.
So we started this tour in January, and it went to middle of May.
Yeah.
And then we have dates this summer, but I came here, I'm going to Europe, and then I come back, and I do like Vegas and some casinos, right? We'll pick back up in August. But, so January through May,
yeah,
my top markets, by a landslide,
yeah,
San Diego.
Of course.
Long Beach.
Okay.
Houston.
Yeah.
Those are definitely the top three. And the ones that shocked me that sold out like in advance, El Paso, Midland.
Wow.
Midland, Texas. I was like, who the fuck goes to Midland?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a beautiful theater there.
Wealthiest postcode in the United States, I believe.
Yeah, but they got
home of Barbara Bush.
They got a beautiful theater.
Oh, the other Bush. Yeah.
One of my favorite theaters. And they came out in droves. El Paso shocked me.
Yeah.
They set out in advance. Those.
Did you ever play markets? Albuquerque?
It's on I think it's on the fall run.
I had a better time playing Albuquerque than I. They begged me not to go to the downtown. They said, you will die. They said, it is a war zone. Stay the fuck away from there.
Huh.
Yes. They were very, very open about it.
I fought for El Paso.
You know, I fought for Albuquerque. I would like to do El Paso.
Oh, Phoenix. I forgot Phoenix was on the tour.
Have you've done the drive through? You've done the drive across there, the Southwest Drive.
What do you mean?
You've like driven through Arizona. I was shocked because Arizona is like the most beautiful state in the Union, and Phoenix is the ugliest place in the state of Arizona.
Not Scottsdale.
I didn't make it to Scottsdale.
Scottsdale's beautiful.
Hmm?
Scottsdale's beautiful. That's the Beverly Hills of Arizona.
I'm not saying there aren't nice places there, but it's flat desert, and you go slightly north, and Sedona and the Alpine region, and then the Grand Canyon is just over
my
there.
My first road gig ever at a comic club was at the Comic Strip in El Paso.
Okay.
I was still in the Navy. I took a week's leave. I drove from San Diego to El Paso, basically took a day, and I'll never forget.
Yeah.
I got paid $500. I was there Wednesday through Sunday. So was it Wednesday, Thursday, one show.
Yeah.
Friday, two. Saturday, two. Sunday, one. So what we do? Four, five, seven shows?
Okay.
Seven shows in 5 days.
You got $500 per show? Or
no. $500 for the week.
Okay.
I was opening for somebody. They put us up at a comic. They put us up at a condo. So there's three comics in a condo.
Yeah.
Right? But I'll never forget. I drove there in my S10 pickup. And this is how I survived that week. I go, okay. Arby's had $2 beef and cheddars.
Yeah.
That was lunch every day. I got a box of Cocoa Puffs and a gallon of milk. So that was breakfast all week.
Yes.
One bowl of cereal. And then you eat dinner at the comedy club and you take something to go back to the room. So all week I probably spent $20 on food and then gas to get back. I remember I got back to San Diego. If I made $500, I still had $400 left. I was like this. Oh, this is easy. This is the best job ever because I was still getting paid in the Navy. And I was like, what do you guys want, dude?
I don't want to story one up you.
Go ahead. I love road gigs.
I went to Brisbane. I had to fly out to Brisbane. So I bought tickets to and from Brisbane. That was all the money I had, but they gave me a weekend, which is huge for me. Like, but I had zero money, and I was in debt on my Uber. I didn't realize that I was in debt on my Uber at that time, but I spent the weekend there. They had a jar full of coins for the comedians. I spent that. There was like $12 in small change in a jar. That's what I used to eat. They didn't give me money for food at the clubs. But then on the last day, it was a Sunday morning. I remember I went to a church because I thought they would have sandwiches and biscuits afterwards and I could eat that. But then I had to make it back to the airport, and the airport was, as I later found out, about a 2.5 hour walk away. But I couldn't get an Uber because I thought if you had no money, you could still go into debt to Uber and they would charge you later. But I was wrong.
No.
I was so, my bank account was back like $150. So even if I was going to ask someone to transfer me money, I would have needed $150 to get to zero before they could give me more. So I walked to the airport, which I'd never done before.
How far is that?
It was like a 2.5-3 hour walk. I did not have the shoes for it. I don't know if you've ever walked to an airport through a major metropolitan city.
No.
You're not meant to do it. I was walking by the side of a freeway after a week of gigs because they don't pay you in a check here. They go transfer you the money afterwards. And I was going, can you give me the cash? I need the money now. They said no. So I had the ticket back, but I had to make it on foot. I remember I had these fucking moccasins that I was wearing because I thought they were cool. The bottom was falling out of them. It was like we would say a 40 degree day. What's that? What's 40? It was like 100 degrees.
I was 40 degrees Celsius.
40 degrees Celsius. No, it was a very, very hot day.
So
I just remember walking through a military base. There was a military base you had to walk through to get there. And it was just rows of cars with guns on the back of them. And so I'm passing in and out of. I was eating 2 minute noodles.
It's just hit me now. Like, it's tougher to probably make it in Australia because, like you said, you only got five cities.
Five real cities.
To do stand up.
Yes. There are road dogs here, but they suffer.
Who's the biggest comedian come out of Australia?
Come out of Australia or in Australia?
No, either. Who's the biggest comedian? Like,
Jim Jefferies is the biggest one.
My manager used to manage him.
He, not anymore?
Jim left? No. They were cool, but they left on good terms.
Yeah.
But when I first got up, she's been my manager for 21 years.
Who else? Yeah, it's
time. She had Jim Jefferies when I first got with her.
But within Australia, there are people who sell huge numbers who just don't, for whatever reason, they don't make it out. Carl Barron never made it out. You wouldn't know Carl Barron.
He's just big in Australia?
He's big in Australia. There are some people. Will Anderson was huge in Australia, and he would go to America. I think he went to like hipster rooms in LA. People here, there's something dirty about being a club act. There's something low. You want me to wrap it up? You're throwing the finger. I understand. I understand.
Yeah, we got
to
wrap it up.
You've been so generous with your time, Gary Owen.
I appreciate it. Talk about getting kicked out.
They're looking at me and they're pointing.
I gotta go, man.
Is there anything you'd like to say to the people of Australia?
Nothing.
Quickly? All right,
nothing.
Fine.
You big cunt. Let's go.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, man. Woo!